Chapter 5. I felt such relief to have all of that out of the way. We'd finally gotten Hortensia disposed of, stolen the evidence against us, and made it back home in one piece. Once I pulled into the drive, I reined in the horses, guided the wagon back to the stable, and then hopped from the driver's seat.
"Finally home!" A.B. cried. "Someone, anyone, take me back to my jaw. I want to be back in my comfy, spacious jaw. I'm never venturing out into the big, wide world with any of you ever again."
"You're the one who begged to come along. You're not going to ask again?"
"No! Well, maybe a few more times, but never on a mission like that. Maybe take me for a stroll through the park or down by the lake, not through that craziness."
"I hear you, I hear you. Fine, we'll never take you out when we need to sneak around and steal things."
"All right. Charles, I may need another cleansing after this. I can feel the human world gunk all over my pores, crinkles, and my brainstem."
"Fine. Though the air outside didn't even touch you, you're completely enclosed in the apparatus. I'll cleanse you tomorrow morning. Do you think you can stand to stay in your jar for one more night?"
"Yes, that'll be fine. I may not have touched the filthy human air, but I felt it touch the glass of the apparatus, and now I feel icky."
"Well, don't say I never did anything for you. You asked me to build you something like a backpack with a glass window for you to see out, and I did precisely that. Are you not grateful? What would happen if I built you all of those tunnels and tubes, and then you hated them just like you did with this?"
"Well, I wouldn't say I hated it," A.B. disagreed. "I would prefer it if the next time you took me out, we didn't do anything nerve-wracking or dangerous."
"Oh, it wasn't that dangerous. We've done a lot worse without you there."
"Yeah. Valerie once killed a man with her bare hands. You should have seen it, A.B.
"I'm not listening," the brain cried.
"She actually bit into him. It tore him into absolute shreds. Blood was everywhere. We had to bring her home and give her a bath immediately because it looked like we dumped an entire bucket of blood over her head."
"I'm not hearing this. La, la, la. Nope, nope, nope. Not listening."
"All right, all right. I'll stop there. So, next time we bring you out, don't complain about it being dangerous or scary." "Fine," the brain whined.
"I only wanted to go out and do something fun. Ride in the back of a wagon, looking at all of the pretty girls strolling down the street. Smell the lilacs billowing in the summer sun. You know, all that good stuff."
"Where'd you get all of that?" I asked. "Was that a memory from your past life?"
"Huh?"
A.B. whispered.
Well, I didn't think of it like that. Maybe it was a memory. Sometimes I get flashes of things. Maybe they are from my past life, and I don't recognize it because I've been a brain for so long."
"I wonder if society was the same when A.B. was alive. Were men and women equal then, or were they the way they are now?"
"Well, A.B. has been in the jar for roughly 15 years, from what I could surmise," I stated. "But who knows? His form was so shrunken and degraded that he could have been a lot older than that. Not only that, you have to take in the average lifespan of a human. I'm not sure at what age he died. From his brain size, I know that he was over the age of 25, but other than that, there's nothing else I can use to determine it. Not unless I took him out of his jar and dissected him, but if I did that, we wouldn't have A.B. around anymore."
"Do you remember anything else? Something that doesn't seem like a memory, but a passing thought of regular human life?"
"One of the things I remember," A.B. murmured, "I used to work in an office, or something like that. There were a lot of filing cabinets where we'd put paperwork. The thing that stands out the most is that there was a gorgeous woman who'd often come in, give us envelopes or stacks of paper, and I was utterly enamored with her. I wouldn't say I was in love with her. I didn't know her, but she was so beautiful that it made my heart ache. There certainly was something holding me back. Maybe it was societal constraints or something along those lines, but I knew that we couldn't be together. I think it had to do with something like social standing. I was a poor man. At least, that's what I remember, and she was certainly an aristocrat from the way she dressed."
"Oh, do you remember what she looked like?"
"She always wore blues and whites. Those were her house colours, I believe. She had the silkiest red hair I'd ever seen. It almost reminded me of the same colour as Hortensia's, but a little lighter. She had huge doe eyes, emerald green, and whenever I'd help her at the front desk, she'd look at me so kindly. But not with pity or disdain, like a lot of the aristocrats did, but with a sweet kindness that I hadn't really encountered while working there.
Well, there's a clue right there.
What do you mean?
A.B. asked. Well, women didn't start taking on house colors until after power started popping up in powerful families, I told them. A lot of people believe that power started popping up here and there rapidly, but a lot of them were wrong. The first recorded cases were only 2 in the whole country within the same year. It took almost 50 years for more than 10 women to have them in the same country. So they started adopting house colors within the last 100 to 200 years ago or so. From the way you speak about her, she treated you with some respect, or maybe she was a harlot. We'll never know.
Sometimes I wonder about her, A.B. murmured. If she's still out there with those wide, dazzling eyes, or if she'd passed on to the next world.
I'd like to know, but I don't remember her name, only her face and the way she treated me.
I'd love to dig a little deeper into this. I want to know more about A.B.'s past, where he came from, and how he got to the state he is now.
I like to believe that I was a swashbuckling vagabond that had to be taken out, and then they kept my brain on display as a sign that they'd taken me out.
Or it could be darker. You could have been sold off to a mistress, one that was a scientist or a doctor, and she could have extracted your brain to study.
How dare you? A.B. chuckled. Let me enjoy my fantasies.
Or you simply died, and they extracted your brain to study. We can't know unless, as Daisy said, we dig into it more.
I think we should do that, I agreed, but not right now. It's late. We've had a long night, and from looking in each of your eyes, I know you're tired and ready for bed.
It's been a long day, and a very long night. I want nothing more than to fall into bed and not come out until it's late afternoon.
Well, you can do that, but I can't. I have a lot to do tomorrow. Not only that, but our dear brainy friend requested a cleansing, and we all know how long that takes. I rested my hand in the middle of Daisy's back, smiled to Valerie, and then grabbed Ryan by the hand. First, we dropped A.B. off in his jar, which we'd left in the kitchen, and then headed back upstairs. All 4 of us undressed in the dim light of my bedroom, slid under the covers and snuggled up together in a warm tangle of arms and legs. I'm not sure what time I started to drift off, but the sounds of my women's heavy, even breathing lulled me to sleep. I was grateful to have them, all of them, and I wasn't sure if I'd been able to finish the job if it had been just me. Valerie, Daisy, and Ryan were so special to me, and I thank the universe for them every day granted with them. It was all thanks to science, my handmade metal machine, and my own brilliance. I awoke to the soft sounds of pattering feet, so I sat up in bed, glanced around, and noticed that Daisy had left the bed. Both Ryan and Valerie were still sound asleep, snuggled up together in a tight ball, and the blonde rested her head on the imp woman's shoulder. I smiled to myself, wriggled out of bed, hurried into a clean set of clothes, and snuck out of the room. I followed the sounds of the bear girl rustling around downstairs, and found her in the kitchen behind the counter. I leaned against the doorframe into the large room, smiled to myself, and then watched as Daisy began preparing breakfast for all of us. The brunette worked diligently, first grabbing heavy ceramic mixing bowls from inside of the cupboards, and then grabbed the eggs. The brunette cracked them into the bowl, poured in a small amount of milk, spices, and then beat them together with a whisk. She turned her back to me, placed kindling underneath the burners of the stove, lit it, and then blew into the tiny space. Daisy grabbed a cast-iron skillet from its place hanging on the wall, placed it on the burner, and then flicked in a pad of butter. She then poured in the egg mixture, grabbed a metal turner, and then stared down at the sizzling mixture.
Well, you're up early today, Charles Rayburn.
The brunette smiled over her shoulder.
It's only polite to announce yourself when you enter a room.
Am I not allowed to admire you while you do daily tasks? But yes, next time I'll announce my presence. I hope I didn't scare you.
Not at all. I heard you get out of bed and then come down the stairs.
Ah, I see. I should have known.
Why don't you sit down? Breakfast will be ready in a minute. It won't be as big of a spread as a few days ago, but it'll be enough to fill all of us up until lunch.
I nodded, smiled, and then stepped into the room toward the small kitchen table. I pulled out a chair, slid into it, rested my elbow on the grain of the table, and then leaned into the palm. Daisy flurried around the room, lit another one of the burners, grabbed another skillet, added butter, and then placed slices of thick bacon into the sizzling pan. "You know, you don't have to do all of this," I grunted. "I can cook for myself. I've been doing it for a very long time."
"I know that, Charles. But I also know, if left to your own devices, you'd be eating the bare minimum. Maybe bowls of plain rice or cold-cut sandwiches. Not only that, but I like cooking for you and my sisters. It's nice to know that I'm a part of this family, and I have a purpose. Maybe it's just cooking and picking up after everyone, but I do my part."
"But I'm saying that you don't have to," I smiled. "I wouldn't mind cooking or cleaning for all of you. I love you all so much, and I want to show my appreciation."
"Don't you think I feel the same way? Not only that, but it would take a whole team to clean up after Valerie. That girl makes so many messes and just leaves them for everyone else to find. I don't mind it, but I know that you're busy down in the laboratory, so I pick them up for you."
"I do what now?"
The feline woman yawned, stepped into the room, stretched her arms over her head, and then skipped to the table. "Leave messes around the house?" I chuckled. "I found a bunch of ripped paper in a drawer just a few days ago. What were you doing with it?"
"I like to rip it up, lay on the floor, and then toss it up into the air. It reminds me of flower petals falling from the trees. There was one big flowering tree in that big courtyard in town. I'd sleep underneath it in the summer, and then I'd wake up to a shower of pink petals. They smelled nice, and were so pretty as they showered down. I like to remember that. So I repeated it with the torn-up paper. They didn't smell as nice and weren't as pretty, but I had fun."
"That sounds wonderful. But please clean up after yourself once you're finished, all right? I don't mind cleaning up after you, but it gets a little tedious."
"Okay, I'll pick up everything I play with."
The library was covered in red yarn.
"I found it in the attic. I couldn't help myself. I'm part cat, you know."
"But you could have rolled it back together once you were finished." "It was a mess. It was all over the place. I even found pieces stuck on top of the shelves. I don't know how you got it up there, but you did."
I opened my mouth to speak, but a soft knock in the distance broke me away from my train of thought. All our heads turned toward the front door. Valerie and Ryan froze, and a pained expression crossed over Daisy's face.
"Who could it be?"
the ash blonde hissed. The imp woman and the blonde slowly stood from their chairs, their muscles tensed and ready to flee toward the other rooms where they couldn't be seen.
"Could it be the Duchess? Why would she be here? Hortensia only died last night. You'd think she'd take a couple days before coming directly here."
"You two, Ryan, Valerie, stay in here," I instructed. "I'm going to go check who it is. If it's the Duchess, I'll cough loudly, and I want you to take that as a sign to hide somewhere. Do you understand?"
"Yes, Charles."
Valerie nodded, hurried to the side of the room, pressed herself against the wall, and then peeked down the hall toward the front door. Ryan nodded, scurried over next to the feline woman, ducked down, and peered out beside her. The red-skinned woman towered over her blonde sister, her black spiraling horns scraped against the wall, but her orange eyes were wide. It would have been comical if my heart weren't pounding and my palms sweating. I nodded to each of them, formed my hands into fists, and then stomped down the hall toward the silhouette against the glass of the front door. My hand rested against the handle for a second. I took a deep breath, prepared myself for whoever was outside, and then opened the front door. Bright morning sunlight flooded in, blinded me for a second, and I blinked to focus my gaze.
"Oh, good morning, Charles. I hope I'm not disturbing you,"
a familiar voice soothed.
"I'm so sorry to have come so early, though. But I was just so excited that I couldn't delay any more. I spent most of the morning pacing the halls of my manor, waiting for an appropriate time to visit."
Josephine stood in front of me, and I drank in her stunning appearance for a moment. The blonde wore a casual dress compared to the ones I'd seen before, The top was long-sleeved, pristine white with small black buttons down the front with a black bow at the throat, and the long floor-length skirt was a slight sage color. Her waist was tiny, but from the way she stepped forward smoothly, I knew that it was natural and not corseted like most of the other aristocrats. Her light blonde hair was naturally curled around her shoulders with small sections at the sides of her head pulled back and cinched together with a bow. I couldn't tell if her cheeks were lightly rouged or if she were blushing at the sight of me, but her skin looked fresh and clean with a youthful glow. Her kind eyes glittered in the bright sunlight. She held a small envelope in her gloved hand and then stepped forward with a wide smile. "Oh, no," I smiled. "You haven't disturbed me, Josephine." I said her name loud enough for all of my women listening to hear, and I could have sworn I heard all three of them sigh out of relief. I was relieved, too. I certainly wasn't in the mood to deal with Edeny if it had been her, or any of the other aristocrats.
"I'm so sorry to have come so early, though. But I was just so excited that I couldn't delay any more. I spent most of the morning pacing the halls of my manor, waiting for an appropriate time to visit."
"What can I do for you today, Miss Josephine?" I asked. "I wasn't expecting a visit so soon after we last spoke."
"Well, I've been thinking since we talked then. We mentioned balls, and ever since then, I couldn't get the idea out of my head. I've decided that I wanted to throw one. It's been a very long time since I've hosted anyone, and I'd like to very much. Especially since you mentioned that you'd come. This invitation includes you and Miss Browning, of course, if she would be interested in coming. So I hope that the two of you do."
Josephine held out the envelope, smiled sweetly up at me, and then flushed an even deeper red once I took it. I turned the paper over in my hands, noticed the wax seal on the back, and examined Josephine's crest for a second.
"You don't have to come. I know how you spoke of hating social gatherings, but I hope that you do. I would love to host you and Miss Browning for a night of dancing, food, and drinks. I sadly had to invite most of the city. I hope you understand. But word gets around. You know how they get if there's a party and they're not invited."
"No, I understand," I nodded. "I'm sure that my mistress will be delighted when I tell her."
"Oh, it's also a masquerade. So I hope to see you in your best with masks and all. I already know that Miss Browning will look so lovely. She's already so pretty in the dresses she wears. I cannot wait to see how she looks when she arrives. That's the best part, the arrival. Oh, I'm just so excited. I've been planning all night and day, but I wanted to drop off your invitation personally."
"That's very kind of you," I breathed. "Thank you, Miss Josephine. I'm sure that Miss Browning and I would be delighted to come."
"Oh, how wonderful. I look forward to receiving you."
I held the letter tightly in one hand, swept forward into a low bow, and then righted myself. Miss Josephine grinned up at me, her eyes almost squeezed shut, and her cheeks flushed a soft pink. The blonde nervously tucked a stray strand of hair behind her ear, curtsied low to me, turned, hurried down the stairs, glanced over her shoulder once more, grinned, and then grabbed the door to her carriage. The blonde aristocrat slipped inside, waved to me from the window, and I stood in the doorway as her carriage turned and then moved down the long drive. I waited there until it was gone in the distance, turned on my heel, and stepped down the hall toward the kitchen. All three of my women waited at the table, swiveled in their seats as I entered into the room, and then smiled up at me.
"Miss Josephine is throwing a ball?"
"Yes," I nodded, tore into the letter, and then scanned the paper for the details. "This coming Saturday at 9 o'clock. It's a masquerade. It's for Daisy and me."
"Oh, I want to go. A ball? That sounds like so much fun. We get to dress up and see all of Edenhard at night."
"A ball? Is that anything like a Ragenzaman Zema?"
A what?" I chuckled.
"You know, a Ragenzaman Zema. We'd wear ceremonial robes, drink brewed mushroom wine, and dance the light away with the other imps. Come on, you have to have heard of the infamous Ragenzaman Zema."
"It must be an imp thing," I smiled. "But it sounds similar to a ball here on the surface. We don't wear ceremonial robes, but women wear ball gowns and the servants and consorts wear suits. It's all very grand and elegant. I've only been to a few, and the Duchess mostly summoned me.
But what's a masquerade, Charles? I'm familiar with balls from Delphine's memories, but I've never heard such a word.
A masquerade is kind of like a ball, I inform them. But you wear elaborate costumes and masks.
Ooh, that sounds like so much fun! Can we go, Charles? Can all of us go? Me, you, Daisy, and Ryan? Please, please, please!
I would like to go. I thirst for a night of revelry, drinking, and debauchery, as I did when I experienced Ragan Zaman Zainma.
I don't know about debauchery, but there will be dancing, drinking, and things like that.
I'm not sure they can go. You are monster women, after all. Ryan has horns and red skin, and you have ears and a tail. People would definitely notice.
I'm not so sure about that, I mused, as I tapped my chin with my pointer finger.
What do you mean? Ryan has horns, for crying out loud. I'm only thinking of our family. What if someone sees, and we all know that someone will notice?
Well, for one, it's a masquerade. People will be wearing intricate costumes, some with horns, too, and masks, so a woman with horns and red skin wouldn't be that out of place or noticeable.
Do you think so? I know I said that I didn't know much about masquerades, but is that normal?
Oh, absolutely. I bet if we bought all of you costumes, no one would notice you at all. They'd think you were just another aristocrat enjoying the party.
I love the idea, and I don't want to seem like I'm trying to ruin the fun. But aren't people going to ask questions if you bring along two other women?
We are sisters. We will tell them as such. We may not be blood, but you are my family, and we will tell everyone as such.
Maybe not sisters, I pondered. It wouldn't be believable with the letters we sent from the Browning family to the Duchess, and I know for sure that Edeny will be there. The Duchess may not like to go out in public, but she never misses a social event such as this. Cousins, perhaps, visiting from the city, wanting to get a small taste of country life since Mrs. Browning moved.
That's better. You are brilliant, Charles. My cousins. Not sisters, but still related by blood. There is an old imp saying that my parents would often quote when I fought with my younger sisters. It goes like this. Nagonrock, Monotok, Mofanuano, Ramonanok, Grattanron.
And what does it mean?
Blood is thicker than water. We may not be sisters in this scenario, but you are still the only ones I will protect and care for.
Then it's settled, I smiled. All of us are going to Josephine's masquerade. I glanced at each of them. Ryan leaned back in her chair, ran her taloned nails through her thick hair, and smiled up at the ceiling. Valerie wriggled in her seat, her hands held tightly to her chest, and giggled every few seconds. Daisy was the only one who looked concerned, but I placed my large hand on top of hers, squeezed it, and gave her a reassuring smile.
"Everything will be all right. No one will suspect a thing," I promised.
"Not only that, but the aristocrats are so full of themselves, I'm sure they'll be more concerned about themselves and their outfits to notice anyone else, especially the three of you."
Thank you, Charles. I feel a bit better now. I'm even excited, too. I just bet that Miss Josephine will be gorgeous in her costume. She's such a stunning woman.
Well, that's funny, because she said the very same thing about you.
But Charles, you're missing the most important part!
And what is that, my dear? I asked.
We get to go to the masquerade, but more importantly, we get to pick out our dresses and our masks, the whole costume! Oh, this is so, so exciting!